Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. This is the show where Roxy and I answer your questions about movies, TV shows, comic books, and everything else we like to talk about. With me, as always, is the amazing Roxy Stryer. What was it? The rocking Roxy Stryer? The rebellious Roxy Stryer? I don't know.
Rebellious.
That's what it was.
Muhahaha.
How you doing, Roxy?
I get it how I live it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that was pretty clear of a response, so I don't think I need to elaborate on that.
Why would you? We'll leave it to you. This is our expression is our art. It's up to the audience to interpret.
For those of you in the back, in case you couldn't hear me, I get it how I live it.
Mm-hmm. Boom. Yes. We will be talking about what we are into. And then this week's topic will be movie theatrical experiences based off of, Roxy, I don't know if you heard about this. Snippets of this conversation had made it into our circles or whatever. But Edgar Wright was hosting a podcast for Empire Magazine talking about, I guess he was like their editor of the month or something. And he was doing a special on like theater experiences in movie theater. And Quentin Tarantino joined him for a 3-hour long podcast discussion about this. And of course I was going to listen to that.
You listened to all 3 hours?
I'm almost done. I tend to listen to my podcast when I'm walking the dog.
Two times speed or regular?
Regular. Ooh, I don't do the 2x speed. I don't like it.
Your dedication to the craft is beautiful, DJ.
Thank you. So, but it was an interesting conversation. We'll dive into that more. That's what we're going to be talking about. We've got some of your thoughts on the Discord about movie theater experiences you have. Obviously, we've got a ton of stuff to dive into. For the full discussion, of course, you're going to want to watch that on or listen to that at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Roxy and I, every week, have a 2-hour long extra bonus super episode that then gets edited down to be our normal podcast episode. But if you want the full discussion, that's at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Now,
an hour, 2 hours. Am I Edgar Wright or am I Tarantino? And who are you?
Okay, well, let's. If I'm going to break it down for listening to it, Tarantino makes a comment earlier on that, like, you know, Edgar Wright talks to everybody. He's got like 100 friends. I only talk to like 5 people, and in the conversation, you can see that how do I phrase it? Edgar Wright is probably the more socially gregarious of the two of them. You know what I mean? Like with Tarantino. He loves movies. He lives. He breathes movies. And so
you're Tarantino.
Yeah. So I'm not. Yeah. Now I'm not that. I'm not that. I'm just saying. Of the two of us, if I'm thinking about who I'd probably rather hang out with, it's you. And so you would be the Edgar Wright in this situation.
I'll take it.
Yeah. So
I'll take it. So I'm Edgar Wright.
I'd say Edgar Wright. Anyway, let's segue into what we're into this. Week. Roxy, what are you getting into this week?
I've been waiting my whole life to talk to you about this. Listen, I've told you a little bit about Free Britney.
Yes.
We've talked a little bit about Free Britney. I have been on the Free Britney bandwagon for a long time now. But for anybody who forgets, Britney Spears is in a 13-year long conservatorship where her father, Jamie Spears, has complete control over every area of her life. From her finances to her contracts to when she sees her kids to who she dates to which jobs she is able to take to where she lives to where her money goes. Every single area, that is what her conservatorship is.
Gross.
And there was a documentary that came out. You can watch it on Hulu. It was in partnership with FX and the New York Times series. New York Times has been doing these docs that are about 90 minutes long where it's New York Times Presents. And then this one is called Framing Britney Spears. I think it's like their 6th episode of it. So New York Times Presents Framing Britney Spears aired last week. And it really, really brought a lot of eyes and ears to the Free Britney movement. Why they didn't just call it Free Britney Spears, I don't know. The framing thing, I think they got a little artsy with that. But in general, this, I think, went from being something that the diehard Britney people were talking about to something that a lot of different circles were talking about. DJ, I'm sure that this isn't probably your main circle, but did this come across your radar at all? Was Framing Britney Spears even on the radar?
Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, obviously I saw it when I opened up Hulu, and there have seen a lot of articles about it. A lot of people talking about what you're talking about, how this has expanded the conversation, and a lot of stuff specifically targeted at Justin Timberlake and how he's represented in the doc.
Yeah, there's a lot at Justin Timberlake and at Diane Sawyer. There has been conversation about that from the doc. So honestly, I really enjoyed this doc. A lot of the information I had, because I am such a diehard supporter.
Yeah.
But there's so many theories that go into this. The main one being that a lot of people think that Britney Spears is behind the making of this doc.
Interesting.
So she has this thing that she's been promoting for a long time called Project Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And Project Rose, no idea what it is. She talks about it on her Instagram a little bit. It's coming. And in this doc, all of the interviews that are done in front of this wall of roses.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end of the doc, it's a video of Britney Spears, and she's in the bathtub, and you just kind of see her legs in her hand, and she's holding a rose in her hand, and she starts rubbing the rose, and it turns into soap.
Mm-hmm.
And she says something like, "See, it wasn't even a rose at all."
Okay.
Or whatever it is. So the one of the theories is that Britney is actually giving clearance on this doc. Another reason for that theory is because they were able to interview a woman named Felicia, who was Britney's assistant forever since she was a little kid. And that they believe that she would not have done that had she not had been given Britney's permission.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the theory. I don't know that I subscribe to that theory. I think that they're just some people who really wanted to help out Britney Spears and help her story are the ones who put out this doc. The other thing is that there was supposed to be a trial in February about this conservatorship. That trial was moved to September.
Interesting.
And so kind of strange and random timing on this doc to try to get the public behind her. And then like now there's going to be months.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that the doc did a really, really great job of bringing a few things to light that really hit home for a lot of people. Number one, really explaining that the only person who suffers from this conservatorship is Britney, because remembering that when you are in a conservatorship, Britney is paying for her lawyers, Britney's paying for her dad, and Britney's paying for her dad's lawyers.
Oh my God.
And so the longer this goes on, everyone is making money, everyone from Britney.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to get people who genuinely have her best interest when they're all making money from her, both sides, every person. So the doc did a really good job of explaining that, because that gives you enough to just question anybody's motive. When you hear that, like, she is bankrolling every minute she fights, she has to pay for and then pay for somebody to fight against her. And that is like, we effed that up in this system. Mm-hmm. That should never be the case. That's just like woof. So it does a great job with that. It also does a really great job of going through her past and talking about the extreme sexism involved in Britney Spears's like decline. Yeah. And we see that through people like Diane and Justin Timberlake. Also, DJ, stop me if I'm getting too woo-woo on you with my Britney stuff.
No, you're fine. I've
been here for a long time. This is mostly for people who didn't watch the doc, who just kind of want to know like what's going on, or for people who did watch it and just want to keep continuing the conversation. So Britney, you know, with Justin Timberlake, they showed that like Justin Timberlake put out stories saying that Britney had been unfaithful. At this time, Britney came from like a 700-person town. Britney was like so famous so quickly.
Yeah.
Britney was claiming to be a virgin, and you know, she was very, very religious, grew up in a very religious family. And Justin essentially accused her of cheating on him, which we don't know whether that's true or not, and then outed her, saying that he had been having sex with her just completely publicly. And every interview is like people being like, "Justin, you dog." And every interview is people being like, "Britney, the juxtaposition of you trying to be this innocent person while having sexual intercourse. And then there's that Diane Sawyer moment where she turns to her and goes, Justin is very upset with you. What did you do? And there's no question about what Justin did. And all Brittany says is, you know, there's two sides to every story. And I'll always love him and have a lot of respect for him. And she's just very sweet about it. She never says one bad thing about him.
Yeah.
It just was like at that time period, Matt Lauer too, there's a lot of people going after her. And she just was always very, very sweet. She, in most interviews, she just sits there, she cries, and she's just very, very sweet. And like, we completely destroyed her. And then, the conservatorship comes, and the cause for it is dementia, which is, I don't know where they even got that from.
Yeah.
And they claim that there are sealed docs that people can't see. So we don't know what we don't know, and that those docs are the reason why. But they won't show anything.
It is strange that we have a system where you can have a dad be like, no, I own my daughter. I just own her. It feels like archaic. You know what I mean? It feels like medieval. You know what I mean? Like, my daughter's acting up, so she gets to be my property from here on to eternity.
Yeah. And that has been the case, DJ, for 13 years.
So you said that at the beginning, that it's a 13-year long, 13 to this point, but still ongoing.
Yeah, still ongoing. Just we've been in this conservatorship for 13 years, and there's no signs of it stopping. And what Brittany has asked is that if she's going to be in a conservatorship, she just wants somebody else in charge. She doesn't want it to be her dad.
Yeah, that seems fair.
And they will not let that happen as of now.
Well, you can't let it be your sister because she keeps running over cats. And so who knows what else she's up to. So is there anything that can be done at this point, at this juncture?
What was challenging for me about the doc, and one of the things I don't think that they hit home very well, was any kind of call to action.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think initially they were putting this out in February because that was when the court of public opinion was going to matter.
Yeah.
But then it's not. So there's not many ways to support. What I've been talking about is just in two different ways. Number one, spreading the word so that people know what's happening.
Yeah.
Because most people don't know what's happening with Britney Spears. And like, there's just no way, at the end of the day, if she was a dude, there's no way this happens. So yeah. Like, I don't know how to explain it more clearly than that like you just said, this is about a father owning his daughter.
Yeah.
Owning her. And I'm not sitting here arguing that Britney Spears would make all the right choices with her own money. I'm just arguing that that's what freedom is, to make the wrong choices with your money.
Yeah.
Because that's what life is. And we might not like what she does with it, but like, we can't just stop anybody who we don't like what choices they make from making those choices. And so just talking about that and talking about how she cannot see her children without her father's permission. She cannot date somebody until he signs off on it. She cannot not show up for work because he has signed a contract and picks jobs for her. From when we see her on TV to her Vegas residency. And if she doesn't show up to the jobs he's selected for her, she is sued. So all of these things. So bringing awareness. And then the other part of this is that she is not the only person in our country who's under a conservatorship that is not legitimate.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking into conservatorships in general and trying to figure out how do we protect the conservators, the people who are, or conservatees, how do we make sure? Because think about this is happening with Britney Spears, but like there's a lot of elderly people. There's a lot of people who are put in these conservatorships who get boned.
Yeah.
But I wish that there was some kind of like donate here, click on this link to spread awareness. But for right now, I think it's just about talking to your friends and sharing what's happening. And so when this does go back to trial, hopefully the world is so outraged. And I know there's other things to be outraged about. And I'm not sitting here saying that she has like the worst of it all, but I am saying that this, for what we stand for here, the fact that for 13 years she has not been able to make one decision is just wrong. It's wrong.
I don't know. I feel like there's a pretty solid argument to be made that what we stand for here is white guys making the decisions for old white men making the decisions for everybody.
Totally.
But let's not continue having that be the case. Just to, before we wrap on this story, talking about an archaic thing on its own archaic terms, not saying that this is the best situation, but I'm wondering if she got married, would it stop?
She's dating this other guy, Sam, right now, who her father must have signed off on. He's not even mentioned in the doc, which is so strange. But no.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Yep. Apparently, I will say that about an hour ago, for the first time, Justin Timberlake did address this.
Mm-hmm.
And he apologized not only to Britney Spears, but Janet Jackson. People have been waiting for an apology from Justin to Janet for years.
Yeah.
Post-Super Bowl. And he said, "I'm deeply sorry for the times of my life where my actions contributed to the problem, where I spoke out of turn or did not speak up for what was right." This is on his Instagram because he's receiving extreme backlash.
Good.
And he should be receiving extreme backlash. But I will say that, at that time, it was everybody.
Yeah.
Like, it was everybody. So I'm glad that he apologized. I hear not such nice things about him in general.
Yes. Agreed. And also, I think back to, wasn't that the story when he got married to Jessica Biel? They had a video at their wedding that, like, exploited homeless people. So
I don't even know.
Like, yeah, I think his like best man shot a video with homeless people that he thought would be funny, but it was just like you were exploiting homeless people for your wealthy.
What was the funny part?
I guess that they were homeless and that they don't get to go to Yeah, it's great. Yeah. And so fuck Justin Timberlake is my general opinion. I don't know the guy, but just the general feeling I have when I think about him.
Because he has there's a lot of hatred in his heart, clearly. And like, what I will say about Britney is, for all the wrongs that she did, you know, for all the crazy things, like shaving her head or whatever.
God forbid she shaves her head.
Shave her head. I know. For all that, she was such an idol and icon in the LGBTQIA community, for women. We've never heard her say something transphobic, homophobic, anti-Semitic, racist, sexist. Like, she for all of her flaws, you know, like being a child star, she clearly does not have that problematic thing of like, I am the best, so other people are less than.
Mm-hmm.
That we don't see that from her. So like, if we're gonna take a dump on people who are celebrities, she's kind of just not the one.
Yeah.
She just seems like a sweet, troubled soul.
Yeah. Well,
it doesn't have hatred in her heart. And so I wish that, you know, when we talk about Justin Timberlake, like, why does he get to control all of it? Why does Kanye West control all of his stuff? Yeah. Why all these people that we see, and Britney shaved her head, so conservatorship?
Michael Jackson dangled his baby over a over a balcony.
I know. And nothing happened. So it's just like she cut her hair.
Mm-hmm.
She cut a haircut.
Yeah.
Shaved it.
It's almost like her dad was waiting for an excuse. But anyway, let's move on to something a little bit more upbeat. Let's talk about struggle meals. What is this?
Okay. So I do a radio show in St. Louis every Monday morning where I call in and I talk about TV shows.
Okay.
I don't know how it happened. It's called The Carney Show with Julie Buck. It is a blast. And for 15 minutes every Monday, they let me talk about TV shows. So this has led me into watching some things that I probably never would have watched, because the hosts of the show are definitely like double my age and they're watching different things than I am. And sometimes they'll ask me like, have you checked out this thing? So the host of the show, Carney, was raving about this. He said, have you checked out Struggle Meals? And I was like, you make shit up. Like, there's no, I don't know what you guys are talking, what world are you guys, but you know, different location, different age, like people watch different things. So he was like, just check it out. So I'd never heard of this show. I'm assuming, DJ, you've never heard of this show.
No, not at all. Because
I don't know anybody who's ever heard of this show. It's on Hulu and it's a cooking show. But the premise is, it's this guy who reminds me so much of Coy Jandro. Like, he is so similar to Coy, just like so excited about every single thing. And he makes food for under $2 a plate, gourmet food.
Dang.
And so he has this, like, he goes around, he has this thing called like his packet drawer, and like, he'll go to restaurants and like take their ketchups and like put it in his packet drawer, or take their sugars, like things that like come in packets.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he goes, he'll like order extra. So he has this drawer that's got like all different like of those packets, and then everything else he buys, but he does it so everything's under $2 a plate, and he makes like these incredible like tacos and pastas and whatever it is. It's just kind of wild to watch. I've never been a cooking show person.
Yeah.
But this guy is so happy about what he's doing. And he's kind of like, it almost looks like he's in a nice dorm room, but it's like nicer than that. And the food he makes is sick. Like,
that's awesome.
It looks incredible. And everything, the way he talks about it is super duper non-pretentious. So just be like, go to the packet drawer. He opens up like seven ketchups and is like squeezing them in or whatever. I just highly recommend this if you're looking for something to put on in the background that's fun, that is a non-pretentious guy who just likes to cook, and to give you ideas about how you can do things kind of cheaply. You know, like he did an episode on brunch where he was like showing how to like carve out a potato and put the egg in it and like what to put on top and all of this stuff, and making brunch for your friends for like everybody's under $2 their plate. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, wow, well, you're spending so much money on brunch. I'm never getting brunch ever fucking again. But everything he does is so exciting. And I know this is not typically the kind of show I talk about here, but I just wanted to shed some light because I've never heard of this thing. And this dude like deserves a little bit of heat in a good way.
That's awesome. That's fun. I like the idea of making meals cheaply. I'm also not like a cooking show person.
Yes, yeah.
But that's how many seasons are there?
I don't know. I've made it through several episodes, so maybe like two or three so far. I think it might still be ongoing. I've literally never ever heard of this. It was hard to find. Like when I type in struggle meals, it didn't even pop up at first. So, I don't know why it's buried, but he's like our age, and I just like that he doesn't take it seriously at all.
Yeah.
Like I hate when I watch cooking shows and they're like, and now, make sure that you, whatever words I don't even know what words that they're using, but he'll be like, okay, take out your Masher 9000 and it will be a fork, and he'll just like start going to work with it. And he'll be like, and grab your Blender 280 and it will be a spoon, and it'll just like mix really fast. Like everything he does is like shit that I had in my college dorm room, you know, like it's not like, and everything looks so good. He does all these things too. Like he'll hold it up to the camera. He'll be like, now you're going to get 1 million Instagram likes or whatever. And he's just silly and stupid. Like he just is like our friend. So
I love it.
I like watching him because I'm just like, wow, this is different. I wish that this was a bigger show. I think pretentious ass people are silly. I try not to be pretentious about anything in life because like what?
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make any sense. So yeah, if you're looking for just somebody fun and a cooking show, Struggle Meals. That's what's up.
Boom. Go check that out. So let's dive into our main topic for today. So as I talked about at the top of the episode, there is an Empire Magazine podcast where, again, Edgar Wright, I guess, was the editor of the magazine for the month. And they did a piece, because we're on lockdown, we can't go to theater, is like theatrical experiences that you've had with a paying audience, not just like a screening or whatever, you've had with a paying audience that like solidified the magic of that moment. And it's Edgar Wright and Quentin Tarantino and one of the guys from Empire whose name unfortunately I can't remember. I'm so sorry. Of course, Edgar Wright and Quentin Tarantino's like, oh, well, I'm gonna listen to this. I don't know if I care about the topic, but there's no way I'm not going to listen to it. And as they were talking about it, I actually found it to be very interesting. The kind of the perspective it took, because obviously I think we think a lot about like an Avengers or a Star Wars movie where the fans are hyped and they cheer and all that stuff. But they also talk about the way people might have heard about this story because Quentin Tarantino shared his thoughts on Joker, specifically the scene with Robert De Niro at the in the interview, and he specifically said that like if you only watch that movie at home you didn't watch the movie because you needed to be with an audience at that scene. He compared it to like watching it at home is like getting a hand job. Watching it that moment in a theater is like being part of a three-way. You know, he used very he explained it the way Quentin Tarantino would. Mm-hmm. So I thought this would be a fun discussion to have with you, because as I was hearing them talk about it, I started thinking about experiences, you know, I had in theatrical stuff. And so I wanted to know, Roxy, we talked a little bit about this before we did the show, but do you have any memories from like being in the theater with an audience and audience reactions and stuff like that?
Totally. I mean, the thing is, and this is so strange, I have really solidified myself as like the TV person, mm-hmm. because TV hits me different. Growing up, we went to the movies all of the time, the time. I was in the, you know, my dad was in the rock and roll industry, so entertainment very close. We loved the movies. My dad didn't ever let us watch movies that were not in black and white at home. He liked like the old school classics, and he wanted us to watch when we watched as a family, that or Westerns. So I did a lot of that growing up. But we went to the movies all the time. There were three movie theaters in my town. And so we just constantly were going, and luckily I came up in a family that could afford the movie theaters. So like that was the place to go. That being said, we were like, my memories are of watching TV shows with, you know, I watched all soap operas and Friends and all of this I watched at home. So for some reason, my whole life, movies just haven't stuck with me the same way TV does.
Yeah.
I think maybe because the amount of time you sit with TV shows, you know, or maybe the fact that like, there's those TV shows that you kind of just like talk through a little bit, like you are learning and growing and talking about it with your parents. And that's kind of how you're educated about things. Like, I remember the first time I learned about sexual assault was watching a TV show and like pausing and like talking to my mom about like what the fuck that was, or like the first time that I learned about like true racism, like TV was that for me. So I always remember TV more, which is bizarre for somebody who's seen as many movies as I have. Mm-hmm. So my most poignant movie, the experiences of going to theater that I remember the most are from my adulthood.
Yeah.
And I think that has been such a different experience for me in the last 5 years as I've become a person who goes to screenings of theaters, of movies, because of our job, DJ. I'm sure you're in the same boat. And I will say that it is so vastly different than going with a normal audience. I don't know the right word to use there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like a paying audience. The way they describe it is a paying audience.
A paying audience as opposed to critics. Because critics react so weirdly to things.
Mm-hmm.
So strangely. Because they're like thinking about how they're going to review something as opposed to just like taking in the movie.
Yeah.
So... yeah, most of my experiences have definitely been strange over the last few years. And also you kind of like are looking around to see how people are thinking. So I do remember that I went to a critic screening of a movie that I loved that was universally hated. I think it has a 13% on Rotten Tomato. And that's Dan Fogelman's Life Itself. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this movie before because I love the movie so much. And I will remember I was in the theater, and there was maybe, it was one of those screenings that was not at like the Grove or Century City. It was one of those like screening rooms. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, there's places that you go that there's screening rooms, and it looks basically like an office building. And then there's just a big old screen in there. And it's just a screening room.
Pretty much any A24 screening I've been to is that.
Yes. Yeah. So it was a screening room. And there was maybe 15 critics in there.
Yeah.
And they were kind of spread all throughout. So it was a very empty theater. And I was watching it with my, at the time, boyfriend. And you know when you can just tell, like, nobody feels the way I feel right now.
Yep.
But I feel this.
Mm-hmm.
And I just won't, I can't forget, like, the almost annoyance of the audience while I was like, this touched my whole soul. And I'm sitting there and I'm crying and I'm feeling it and I'm relating to things. And like, I'm feeling like somebody has seen into me and has created a movie to like touch me. And I just, that feeling of feeling like something is for you and not for anybody else.
Yeah.
And knowing that, being in the theater and all these critics in there wanting to be like, well, this doesn't make sense. And like, just feeling that energy of people wanting to like bash on, ready to bash on this.
Yeah.
And just being like, everybody get the fuck out of my bubble.
Yeah.
Cause this is my movie. Mm-hmm. That was one of the more powerful movie going experiences I had, where I felt like protective over what it was that I was watching. Does that make any sense?
No, it does. It does. And I think it touches on something interesting that I thought they were talking about. The thing in that podcast is the way you can feel the energy in the room. You know what I mean? And so the fact, and I would imagine you're like me, that you can't quite articulate what it, the specificity of why you're able to tell the energy of the room is that way, but you can feel it. You can feel like, oh, these people have turned on this movie. Like, we can
turn on it.
And normally that was like, I remember we went to a screening for the new Hellboy, and that was one where I was like, I was with the audience. I had turned on it with them. Like, we were all in the same boat.
You're
on
laughing.
That one. Yeah.
It was a lot of laughter. That was a wild screening. Yeah.
And so, my experience like that is also at a screening room, but weirdly enough, going back to your earlier point, was a TV show. We went to a screening event for the final episode of Game of Thrones, and the episode aired, and where they played the episode, and I was like, you know what? It got turbulent near the end, but they landed it. Not that like it was necessarily what I'd imagined, whatever. But like I clapped. I was like, you landed it. You know what I mean? You did. Not everything was perfect, but you successfully. We things were getting rocky, but we landed the plane. That was it. I was the only one that had anything positive, any positive feelings about the way it landed or the way it had ended. Similar, I remember walking out of Glass, and Sam and I were in that screening, and we were like, yeah, we liked it. And like, no, we weren't, you know, it didn't touch us the way that movie touched you, but we're like, yeah, we're into it. But you could hear the critics around us and like, oh, we're the ones, we're the only ones, here. For me, listening to this conversation made me think of a couple things. One, to touch on the thing that had kind of been part of the news cycle with Joker. I will say, like, I watched it in the theater, and even though I had mixed feelings at the time about the movie, there was a palpable energy in the theater. Like, when you say, like, it's a different experience watching that movie in a theater with an audience than watching it at home, because I watched it again when it was on HBO Max with my wife, and it was just different. It was just a completely different feeling, just this tension that was in the theater when we watched that movie.
There was also the weirdness about that movie that there was added security for the movie.
Yeah.
I think that one of the things about that film that was so wild is that we were all on such high alert.
Yeah.
Because, of what had happened with the Dark Knight shooting and leading up to this, and the threats that there was going to be an attack on the theater.
Yeah.
And I know that that's not specifically what you're talking about right now, but all of that kind of played into that screening of that movie. Was, I felt like we were all in something together.
Yeah.
Like an us versus them. Mm-hmm. And then that idea played very well into the film.
Yeah.
So I thought that the movie was incredible, but unrelated to that, I felt like that movie going experience was so, like my heart was pounding.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I want to sit on the aisle because I'm afraid of what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
And then we're watching something happen, and like the whole art imitating life, like that was just like a very overwhelming the experience.
Yeah. For me, a couple positive experiences that I immediately thought of. One was Fantastic Fest.
You and Sam have spoken about this forever.
Love Fantastic Fest. Love the experiences there. Such a positive audience to be with. But I got this on a smaller level. One of the first years I went, there was a movie in my first year called Brawl in Cell Block 99. It was made by the same guy that did Bone Tomahawk, S. Craig Zahler. Anybody that's watched his films knows that he likes to, if Quentin Tarantino makes talking movies with spurts of violence in them, this guy's like, wait, what if I make it even slower? But I love his movies. And specifically in Brawl in Cell Block 99 builds to the titular brawl in the cell block. It sounds like a prison fight movie. Like Michael J. White's going to come in and start spin kicking people's heads in. That's not what this movie is at all. It's more of a very talky, pulpy drama, but it builds this fight. And once the fight hits, man, the audience was into it. Like it was electric. On a much broader scale was this movie called The Night Comes for Us, starring a lot of the key actors from the Raid films. So if you're familiar with those movies, you kind of know what you're in for. But that was just wall-to-wall, balls out, sometimes literally, bloody action fight sequences that was like, you could feel the electricity in the theater. Like we were in it. We were loving it. Like our brains were melting with what we were seeing. And it was interesting because it was a Netflix movie. Some of the movies that go to Fantastic Fest are actually Netflix movies. So in a couple months, you can just watch them. And so when it came out again, I watched it at home and still, I highly recommend it. Still love it. But you couldn't capture. It was like, it's like listening to a band live and like buying their album at the concert and then playing it at home and you're like, oh, this is good. But it doesn't match that experience of watching it live. Like that experience and just the crowd cheering and the way everything played out was just something that will be burned in my brain. And on the flip side of that, in a lot of ways was, Roxy, you probably know this about me at this point. I try to live my life very cheaply. I don't spend money. I don't like a lot. I think a lot of actually what came my critiques of films or my pickiness of movies came from being young and having to be selective about what I spent my money to go see. Cause if I was seeing this, I wasn't seeing that. So I had to make sure I was spending my buck wisely. So, my wife and I, wanted to see The Witch. We were trying to line it up with her schedule. We ended up seeing, I almost never do this. I almost do early, usually do earlier screenings to avoid, again, spending money, do the matinee. But we saw it at this cheap little theater in Van Nuys at like 10 p.m. So it's like, we're going to be in this movie till midnight. I'm already tired. I'm flagging. I've had a long day, but I'm stoked.
Gotta get that caffeine, DJ.
I don't do coffee or any of that stuff. So I had to, whatever. I had to muscle through, but I'm stoked to see this movie. I've heard nothing but good things about this movie. I'm ready for it. It's so late. There's only a few people in the theater, but this one group of teens about like 30 minutes in kind of like drift in talking to each other, 30 minutes into the movie. And they're talking about this and that. And you can hear enough of their conversation that what I'm picking up on is that they bought tickets for one movie and they're kind of drifting from theater to theater. And so there's that sense of like, oh no, I'm going to have to deal with these guys as I'm trying to watch this movie. I just saw Baby Ground to Pulp and now I'm going to have to deal with these guys, whatever. But something, they drifted out and then they drifted back in. And then something interesting happened that kind of blew my mind is that at a certain point they shut the fuck up. At a certain point, whatever was going on in that movie quieted down because they were off on their own. They were teenagers. They were doing teenager shit. And they started watching it. They shut up and watched the rest of the movie. And then by the time we left, they're like, oh, that was really good. And I was like, that's incredible. That was the craft of that movie, that these people that did not give a fuck got caught up in it. You know what I mean? We're invested in what was actually going on in that movie to the point that like by the end they were invested with what was going on, and that's another experience that I'll stick with me for a while. The last one I wanted to mention.
It's nice when people shut the fuck up and listen.
It's so nice. Roxy, did you ever see Mother? Darren Aronofsky's Mother.
I'm thinking you're not going to say positive things about this, but this would be wild if you do right now.
I actually like Mother. I actually like Mother. My wife and I saw it with Sam and his brother, and I really enjoyed it. the audience, including Sam, he's been pretty vocal about not liking that movie, did not enjoy it so much, to the point where I think, if I remember correctly, Sam's brother walked out. Just pulled the parachute on that movie a lot. And
have you ever done that?
No. No. If I've spent money on something, I'm riding out. I have done it on something like Fantastic Fest, where you're seeing like 5 or 6 movies in a day. Mm-hmm. And like you're staying up late, waking up early. Like I might be dozing out on a movie. I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna bail. I don't care about this. But like if I've spent money to go see a movie, I'm sticking it out. Even to the point where if I'm watching a movie at home, I try to watch the whole thing. Just because sometimes, like for example, you watch a movie like Whiplash, which is actually another positive movie theater experience for me. I enjoyed Whiplash throughout, but then you get to the ending, and the ending elevates that movie to a whole other atmosphere. It mm-hmm. shoots that movie through the roof. And so if you left that movie early, you didn't see the movie. You know what I mean? Like you actually don't know what that movie was capable of doing. You've got it. So typically for me, my mindset is I need to sit through this because this, even if I'm not enjoying the movie now, by the end, I might be sold.
Yeah, I'm with you. But you were telling me, so Sam's brother walked out.
Yeah. So mother was an interesting experience because people, they were bailed on, they were not feeling that movie. And that was an interesting where the audience was turning on the film. But we do have a few. I'm not going to be able to get to all these. I want to thank everybody that sent stories. And I asked you guys experiences you had with movies. So I'm just going to hit a couple of these. We got Jake Hefner. Talking about, so opening weekend for Avengers Endgame, I go on Saturday, and obviously the theaters are mostly sold out, but it's understandable. The seat I get is the furthest row back. Again, it's fine. I just want to see the movie. The theater is filled to the rafters with people. Again, this is understandable. I'm in between two people, and the guy on my left immediately says to me, "It's exciting, isn't it?" And I said, "Yeah, it is." 20 minutes of preview starts, which I personally love the previews. The guy next to me, like 2 minutes in, starts talking loudly. Just start the movie. And now I hate with a passion when people talk during the movies, but again, we're all excited. So I give him a pass. So this keeps going on to the point where, paraphrasing a little bit, like he sees, when Hawkeye's family gets vanished, that guy that's talking says, "Yep, Thanos got him." And Jake says, "Now, normally I'm very non-confrontational, but I just snapped at this guy in front of God and everyone. Thankfully, shut up, but it doesn't stop there, folks. My local theater has reclining theater seats, and the same guy is sitting so awkwardly, like a 5-year-old, to the point where he, like every 2 minutes, he's tossing and turning and making all kinds of noise and being very distracting. This unfortunately carried on throughout the entire film, and I was so aggravated. The anger I felt that day was on a different level, I'll tell you what." So that was not a positive one. We got one here from Brenda. I'm going to take it back a little bit. Midnight premiere for Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince was probably my favorite movie experience. Mm-hmm. We waited outside the theater for hours, and the businesses at the mall I went to set up deliveries to the line. We sang and danced to a Harry Potter musical in costume while we waited for the movie to start. It was so fun. The theater was extremely accommodating, essentially hundreds of nerdy college kids living their nostalgic dreams for 10 and 16 theaters. Let's see. Danny says his favorite movie experience was he did a marathon of the IMAX release of The Dark Knight Rises at midnight. So I watched Batman Begins and Dark Knight all in one shot. I don't know if I could ever do one of those marathons. I don't know if I have the...
It's a lot. That would be a lot.
It'd be a lot, especially the ones that are like, we're going to watch the whole MCU for 3 days leading up to Endgame. I was like, God bless you. Also, for the premiere of Batman v Superman, I was invited to a fan premiere week before the release, and we spent all day in theater camping out, chatting about, and the movie had a special intro by Zack Snyder in video. Zayrol talks about seeing Force Awakens opening night with his best friend. She wore fur like Princess Leia buns, and tons of people wore Jedi robes with lightsabers. So a lot of stuff like that. A lot of fun. People remembering fun experiences like that. Like, before we wrap up, when it comes to stuff like that, Roxy, do you think it's stuff, experiences like that, that will, you know, because people are a lot of hand-wringing about like the end of cinema, the end of the movie-going experience. How do you think experiences like this will help movies going forward?
With open arms, I think we're going to take back movie theaters, and movie theaters are going to take us back. I think that we all want to feel part of something. I know that I openly admit that I have severe FOMO, and some people aren't as willing to admit that, but we've all got it. I don't know anybody who doesn't have a little bit of fear of missing out. So I think that this is what I think we're all going to suffer from. And I don't mean to use this phrase lightly, but a little bit of PTSD after this situation. Yeah. It's going to be weird to go back into the world, but being in a movie theater, watching something for better or worse, and feeling something with an audience, that's going to be huge.
So I know my last movie in theaters was Bloodshot, unfortunately. I wish it was Invisible Man. I've said that before. I'm just gonna imagine it was Invisible Man. What do you think our this is thinking way in the future, but what do you think our first movie going back is it going to be? Something like Bloodshot, where it's like, well, at least we're back, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it wasn't this movie, but hey, at least we're back.
No, because I don't think they're going to come back until it's a big one. Even know what that's going to be. Black Widow?
Could it be Dune?
Well, Dune, I think, is not going to be in theaters.
I mean, Villeneuve is fighting it. He's trying to make that happen.
I know.
Is it going to be M. Night Shyamalan's Old? That kind of surprised me during the Super Bowl when that trailer came up and said only in theaters. I'm like, good luck with that.
I know. That's not going to be mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. And I don't think it's going to be all of us at once. I think it's kind of going to be a rollout. I think for the critics, probably they'll start doing, like, you know, before when you would go to, Century City, and they'd have like four different theaters playing the same thing for the critics because it would be one of those huge ones.
Yeah.
I think it might be like that, like where like it's every other seat or more than that.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And so we might have a few of those, but I don't know. I don't know when the next time that I'm going to like call a friend on a Saturday and say, do you want to go see a matinee with me?
Yeah.
I don't know what that movie's going to be.
Yeah. Well, before we go, remind the kids at home where they can find you and what they're up to, what they should be checking out.
Everywhere at Roxy Stryer, every single day, youtube.com/Roxy Stryer, live at the Roxy. Today will be day 334. Jeez. Making our way through the days.
So close.
The World Girls on Wednesdays and Sundays. We've been doing a lot of food things recently where we just eat like an effing ton. This month we are supporting local Black businesses. So we are going to be giving sweets a whirl on and trying all different desserts and pastries and candies from different Black businesses or Black owned businesses. So we're excited about that. And also at the end of the month, we're giving waxing a whirl, and that episode is looking incredible. So, and very bloody.
Oh, there you go.
Very bloody episode.
There you go, kids. So make sure to check all that out.
Who wouldn't tune in after that pick?
Exactly. Come on. You need to see it. You can find me at DJ Talks Trash, every place that matters. You can follow the show at Only Stupid Answers. But on Twitter,
yank out the vowels from stupid. You know what I think I'm going to start doing?
What?
When you talk about Only Stupid Answers, but it's not for on Twitter, mm-hmm. I think I'm going to say keeping the vowels from stupid.
Keeping the vowels from stupid. But on Twitter,
yank out the mouth, stupid.
Boom, there it is. So be sure to follow us there. If you want to watch this full show, you can do that at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Check out our WandaVision reviews on YouTube and all of that jazz, and we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.